Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, here with life coach Monique Scott, and this is your daily dose of happy. We're so happy you decided to join us today, and Monique, we're going to have to kind of get back onto track where we were a couple weeks ago. The music decided to start again. We'll stop the music. But where we were a couple weeks ago, we actually had something we were going to bring up, and then last week, of course, Joel joined us, and so that had to take top priority, because you don't get that option very often. But no, 2 weeks ago, we had a kind of a topic at the end about creating a list of characteristics in your mate. And so I figured that becomes the starting point for today's conversation. But before I get there, I have a little bragging to do regarding LOA Today, because as of today, we surpassed, for the lifetime of the podcast, all the time I've been doing it, we surpassed 500,000 episode plays.
Woohoo!
Milestone. This is pretty exciting. And I'm expecting, now that one took 8.5 years. I'm expecting this one, the next 500,000 is going to take about a year. But, you know, you take your steps one at a time. And this is a big step. I mean, I love this one. I can remember, now I hadn't been counting them all going back to the very first year. But when I did first start counting, it was 2016. And we were getting 20 visits a month on an episode. So it's pretty easy to imagine how small the numbers were before that. But nevertheless, I can remember just a few years back getting to 10,000 and thinking that was a big deal. And I can remember a couple years ago getting to 100,000. That was a big deal. Now we're at 500,000. So the curve is looking good. Looking really good. So how are you doing? You're looking good. How's it feeling?
Thank you. I'm doing good. Not as productive today as I was yesterday, but still productive, right?
That's all right. It's more about the feeling than the productivity anyway. So if you're feeling good, that's really the most important.
Oh, I'm feeling great. Thank you.
And there you go.
What are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. Well, we've been having some nice weather here in Connecticut, which is a nice shift for us. Yesterday we were in the 60s. We're going to be in the 60s tomorrow and on Friday. Today we're in the 50s, but for March, early March, I'll take that. Yeah. That's not typical in Connecticut. Guys. Yeah. Yeah, snow's melting. We're actually seeing bare ground. It's amazing.
Okay, so I won't talk about the 79 degrees here in Houston.
You're just going to bum me out if you do that one.
So. Okay, so I never said it.
No, I'm kidding.
But it's overcast?
Hey, the weather is good no matter where you are. It just depends on how you feel about it and how you choose to feel about it,
exactly.
Right? So it doesn't really matter.
It's all perspective.
That's right. I mean, Dean McMurray, he lives in the Dakotas, so his perspective is all about how enjoyable it is to live in cold weather, right?
Yeah.
In fact, he was telling me yesterday that they're expecting a big snowstorm. Denver, I guess, is expecting one of the biggest in the history of the city coming up in the next day or two. And winter may be coming in like a lamb in Connecticut, but it's coming in like a lion elsewhere. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay.
And it's all about how you decide to feel about it. I mean, Denver area, there's a lot of skiing in that area. So the ski resorts are loving that one.
Yeah, I'm sure they're happy about it.
Bring it on. But anyway, with that little bit of business out of the way, let's go to the topic for the day, the idea of making a list of characteristics in a mate. And by the way, this is a technique that people usually use when they're trying to attract a mate, but it can be used with anything. It can be used with creating the career of your choice. It can be used with improving your health. It can be used with, attracting money. It can be used with anything, getting more friends, anything. It doesn't make any difference what you use it for, but typically it's used for getting a mate. And I don't know why. It's usually women who write the list down. Men don't seem to write the list down. I didn't write mine down, but Louise wrote hers down. I don't know what that is, but every pattern that I've seen has said it's the women who tend to do it if they do it at all. And a lot of people don't do it at all. Now, you made a list. Tell us about the list that you created. Or have you created one?
I did. This was back in 2016.
Okay.
The very first time I did it. And honestly, I haven't done it since. But anyway, never mind.
See, that goes right to my point, right?
Well, there's a reason why I haven't, but... Back in 2016, I had, I came out of one relationship and then I got into, I met another nice gentleman right after that, maybe a month and a half after that one ended, right? And that one lasted for about 6 months.
Okay.
And then after that one, that's when I said, you know what? Thinking about the two previous relationships I just had, I have a pretty good idea of what I want and what I don't want. Everybody always knows what they don't want.
Yeah.
It's more difficult. Yeah, it's more difficult for some people to pinpoint what they do want. So,
and critical.
I want it.
Yeah, because if you aren't specific about it, you're not going to get it. Or, well, you might get something similar to it, but if you're looking to get exactly what you're looking for, it's probably not going to happen unless you get specific.
Yeah. Kind of like you said about the career, right? Oh, I want a career in insurance. Then you end up being an insurance agent, but you really wanted to be an underwriter. Well, maybe you should have specified that, right? Mm. But anyway, so I did have the list and I manifested the next person that I dated was every single thing. And do you want to hear something interesting?
Okay.
All right, ladies. I hope y'all are listening to this, ladies, because law of attraction is real. I put on the list that I wanted him to be rich.
Ooh.
That's exactly what I said.
Wow.
Little did I know he was a millionaire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that when I met him. I met him on like match.com, right?
Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, of course, nobody puts on there, I'm a millionaire.
Yeah. Not unless they want to get 500,000 emails.
Right. Right. But his photo was a business attire. He was in a business suit. And that's what attracted me because I'm business oriented. I love everything. I love talking business. So, and then when I read his, bio, it rang true for me. Like I had articulate on there. I had smart. I had highly not just intelligent. I said highly intelligent.
Mm.
And he was from corporate America. Well, he worked in corporate America. He was pretty high up in corporate America. And, he also owned several online businesses.
Wow.
So that's where his money came from.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Interesting too. He was still in corporate America with those online businesses.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. He was.
Yeah, very interesting. Because I mean, most people they want to leave corporate America to go do their own business. They usually don't stay to do their own business. I mean, I actually started my businesses when I was working corporate as well, but I also left. I didn't stay there. So that's why I find that really fascinating.
Fair. He didn't stay. He did end up leaving.
Oh, he did. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
He did end up leaving. So in hindsight, I guess he was on the way out.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Corporate America was like his angel investor, right? For his business.
Ah, yes. Okay. Yeah. That's a good way to look at it too. Well, okay. So you got everything that was on the list.
Everything.
First of all, did that surprise you? Because I mean, that is the story that I hear over and over again that when people, particularly women, when they write down the list, they get everything on the list. It's not 9 out of 10. They get all of it. Did that surprise you?
Yes. Because that was like, I was trying out the law of attraction. I had just watched The Secret for the first time. I know I was way late.
Hey, no later than I was, really.
I was trying to try out this law of attraction kind of thing. And then, as a matter of fact, he's the one who really introduced me to the law of attraction.
Cool. That's nice. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine a lot of people want that. They're looking for the partner who's into LOA, you know, and you found somebody not only into it, but he could teach you about it. That's a good deal.
Yeah. And he often says now, he says the student has now become the master.
Ah, yes. Okay.
That's what I do for a living now. It's funny.
That's fabulous. So are you guys still together?
Oh, no. We broke up several years ago, but we still keep in touch here and there.
That's nice. That's good.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from it? Because you got what you asked for, but apparently it wasn't quite what you were really looking for. So did you amend the list going forward?
No.
No? So you're basically just, you're sticking with it. You just, you know, let that bus go, time for the next bus.
Right.
Okay. That's interesting. Very cool. All right. I think this is the first story I've heard of somebody who got what they asked for and they said, no, not quite right. Next.
It was okay for a little while, but back then I didn't know what narcissism was. Yeah, it wasn't until after we stopped seeing each other that a friend of mine said, he sounds like a narcissist. I had heard the term, never knew what it was, but once I started doing more research around it, all the things that happened in our relationship made so much sense.
So you got a crash course is what you got.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't want to do that anymore. So now we're okay. Wish him the best, though, of course.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, actually, that raises an interesting question. And if this starts to get into unfavorable territory to discuss, let me know. But nope. I'm curious.
I'm an open book.
I'm curious because my perception of narcissism is that it is, and I've expressed this particular opinion on the show before, a narcissist is somebody who appears to love himself, but deep down really doesn't love himself all that much. And I'm wondering if you found that to be true.
That is correct.
It is true. Okay.
That is correct. Yes. Okay. They're very good at pretending. So if you think about it like an actor who pretends, they're very good at pretending that they care, pretending that they have your best interest at heart, but they never do anything that is not self-serving. Like it's all about them, whatever they do for you. It's never just because I love you, Walt, you know, I'm going to do this thing for you. I'm going to do this thing for you and Walt. I'm going to tell you, oh baby, I love you. But it absolutely has nothing to do with you. It's all about whatever I can gain from you.
And that's it. Okay.
Nothing else.
And it doesn't go any farther than that. Yeah, that's the thing that's really challenging when it comes to dealing with a narcissist, is seeing through to that fact and recognizing that there really is nothing outside of the narcissist's universe other than themselves.
Right. And, you know, as regular human beings, right, compassionate people who think about others quite naturally, right, because that's how we're built as human beings by nature. We care for one another. That's really difficult for our mind to grasp because they make it seem so real. They're so manipulative. They're so good at what they do, right? And he was so good at it.
Yeah. It also, this is an interesting quandary, if you will, for those of us who are interested in being conscious creators, because one of the things that often gets taught, and we've talked about it here on the show numerous times, Neville Goddard, we talked about Neville. Yeah. Neville's a person who taught this. A number of famous teachers have taught this. The idea that everything in our life is our own creation, everything, right, including the people in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that the only world is the one that we live in ourselves, and everybody else is just, they're just mirrors. They aren't actual people. They're just mirrors of us, so to speak, which is a model I've always had a little bit of discomfort with for this very reason, because it's very easy for that model to shell a narcissist. So I'm curious to know, do you subscribe to that theory? And if so, was your experience with this gentleman influenced by an influence on how you feel about this particular question?
I completely believe, and what you're referring to is what Neville Goddard says. He says that everyone is you pushed out, or everyone is the world, you know, pushed out.
Right.
Meaning just what you said, you know, we are a reflection. The world around us is just a reflection of what's within. And so when I think about a prior boyfriend to him, looking back, he was also a narcissist as well.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I was with him for 5 years. Right. And so it only stands to reason. And I have no problem admitting this. Right. Because I like to think I'm very self-aware. I know it's something within me. It was something within me that attracted both those types of individuals. Now, of course, every boyfriend I've ever had has not been a narcissist, just those two. But those
I'm glad to hear that, by the way.
Me too, right?
Yeah, right?
But those two individuals, I definitely learned the most about, not only about narcissism, but about myself as well, right? Just allowing myself to be manipulated, taken advantage of, I used to be a really big people pleaser, so that was part of it, right? I'm no longer that way. But in hindsight, well, you know, I can be honest and say, hey, I can see why I was an easy target, if you will, for them. Because I'm so giving, I'm so nice, I'm so loving, I'm so non-judgmental and just, you know what I mean? Kind of easy in relationships. So
yeah, sure.
Non-combative, that kind of stuff, you know, I'm just chill. So I can see why they could just swoop right in. Oh yeah, Monique, yeah, girl, I love you. Yeah.
Gonna grab that one. Yeah, right.
All the stuff.
Well, what that really means is that you learned how to distinguish. You learned how to discern the real person from the actor.
I can spot it a mile away now.
Yes. You have developed the skill.
Yes, you bet your Batman shorts I have.
I love it. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, other than that, I got everything that I asked for.
Which is pretty cool, yeah. And by the way, I love the fact that you own up like, yes, I attracted. I mean, it's easy to just buy into the other thing. Well, you know, these are two men who took advantage of me, you know, that kind of thing. And you don't do that. And I love that about you. I think it's fabulous. So got to give you your props for that one.
Well, you know, Walt, it's kind of like what we say. And I don't know if you've ever heard this term before, but don't hate the player, hate the game, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm not mad at them for being who they are, but now I can recognize people like that, men and women. So,
Actually, I can speak for the game part because that used to be the thing that I hated when I was single. I hated the game. It wasn't until I gave up on hating the game that things improved. So, like, you really can't hate any of it. Hating is just, right. No matter what kind of hating you're talking about, it's basically just going to come back and boomerang.
That's true. That's so true. I agree.
But I do want to get back to the concept of, you know, you pushed out, as Neville Goddard expressed it. Mm-hmm. Because if you take that to its extreme, basically it is a proposal that the way to be the ultimate creator is to be a narcissist. To basically treat everybody else not as individuals, but as nothing more than mirrors of yourself.
That's interesting. I never would have thought about it from that perspective. Please elaborate. This is getting interesting.
I love Neville Goddard. In fact, Sidney Chavez and I did a whole bunch of his books. We did like 10 or 11 of his books. I mean, really extensive look at the teachings of Neville and enjoyed it very much. I was glad to do it with her because she has herself extensive knowledge of comparative religions and so forth and philosophies and theologies and all this other stuff. So when it came to dissecting all of the metaphors and the symbolism and the representations of the Neville approach, she was the perfect person to do it with. So I was really glad that she was my co-host doing that part of it. But we did spend a lot of time on Neville and I love so much of what he has to say, but there are little bits of it that kind of bother me. That is one of them. And I know that when Cindy and I talked about it, we realized you had to remember that everything that Neville said was metaphorical. Mm-hmm. It was very rare for him, not never, but it was very rare for him to make a direct simile, if you know what I mean by a simile. Right. Like, this represents that. He almost always said it metaphorically. On those occasions where he said it was a simile, like God is consciousness, that was a very specific message he was trying to give you. Yeah. So he used the similes in a teaching way. Mm-hmm. What he never did that I can recall was to say that the Bible was literally true. In fact, he often would emphasize it is a consciousness play.
Right.
And he only focused on certain aspects of the Bible, you know, so he was carving out his own philosophy and so forth. And when it came to this idea of you pushed out, when we read those segments, and that was actually in a couple of his books, maybe three of them, I'm not sure exactly. I don't remember off the top of my head. But when we read those segments in detail, what we realized was that the you pushed out was also metaphorical. It was not direct discussion of reality. And I think that's where the difference is. Cindy and I kind of agreed that the people who we would refer to as fundamentalist Nevillites are the ones who treat the you pushed out thing as if that's literally true.
Uh-huh.
kind of similar to, say, a fundamentalist Christian or a fundamentalist Muslim or something like that, who do the literal approach of whatever their liturgy right. is all about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the Neville followers. Whereas we realized and came to the conclusion the you pushed out was simply a way of saying, if you want to understand what's going on in your life, understand that other people are mirroring back to you what's going on in your own thought process. Do not necessarily understand that that means that they are nothing more than reflections. They are also individual human beings. And he indirectly points to that a number of different times. A lot of people who read Neville kind of skip that portion, just to say the least. But it is a bit of a risk when it comes to understanding that metaphor. And that is recognizing that it's a metaphor. If you don't recognize it as a metaphor, you can get kind of lost in it. And I've seen people get lost in it. So that's why I wanted to raise the question to see what you thought.
I think people do.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you can see how they could come to the conclusion. It's pretty straightforward, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I totally love Neville. I started reading him maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Way too deep for me then. I was completely over my head. I was like, what is this man talking about?
What is he talking about?
Real. Of course, those were real people. But now I do understand he means that they represent states of consciousness for us. So,
Cindy and I used to refer to all of his metaphors as sort of a ring to be a ring of all of the possible meanings of his words to understand. We called it the Neville decoder ring. And if you ever wanted to understand what Neville was saying, you checked your Neville decoder ring to find out whenever he uses the word Jesus, he means imagination or consciousness and whatever that kind of thing. So you're constantly doing these word replacement games. And when you did that, all of a sudden, oh, now it all starts to make sense. But you had to get that decoder ring on. Otherwise, forget it. You were lost.
Neville's pretty deep, but it's great study. I think so. It is.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And he's contributed really good stuff. I mentioned that there are a couple things that I was never really crazy about. One of them was the way that his teaching gets turned into literal teaching, as if he was saying stuff that were intended to be literally true rather than metaphorically true. Mm-hmm. I can't really blame Neville for that. That's really his followers who are doing that.
Right.
The other thing that I don't fault him for it, but I'm not as pleased with Neville as I am by other teachers, is that he does have a tendency to complicate a simple subject. You know what I mean?
That is true. That's why it's going to my head.
And I understand why he was doing it, because of the audience he was talking to. I mean, he was talking in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s mm-hmm. to an audience that was very religious, very Christian.
Yes.
Some Jewish, but mostly very Christian. Mm-hmm. In fact, mostly Catholic. And his need that this is Cindy and me interpreting. I'll say actually in this case, it's me interpreting. I think Cindy would probably agree with this. His need was to relate to them using a framework and language that they would appreciate and understand.
Yeah, that they would understand. I agree.
And plus also, if the story is true, he was taught this stuff by an Arab named Abdullah. And Abdullah presumably taught him this to help him understand his own Christian background, because he was a Christian.
Right.
Before he started teaching all this stuff. So it was probably partly to satisfy himself and kind of explain away stuff that had bothered him about his faith. It was partly to incorporate what Abdullah had taught him. And it was partly a way to just communicate to his audience. So I'm sure that combination is why he taught the way he did. Yeah. But when I compare it to the modern teachers, like the Tony Roberts or the, Abraham Hickses or, Louise Hay, any of these people who have been teaching more recently, it's so complex. Whereas the Abraham Hicks method is you focus on how you feel. If you're feeling good, you're on the right path. If you're not feeling good, you're going to produce some results you don't like. Oh, well, shoot, that makes it really simple.
Right.
I don't have to figure out all this other stuff about what consciousness is and who's Jesus and who's God and what is heaven and all that. Just focus on how you feel. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really, really simple that way.
Yeah, we all have our lanes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Neville had his. Abraham has hers. Yep. Bob Proctor has his, right? Yep. Yep. I think we all have our own lanes. Whereas manifestation, law of attraction, spirituality is concerned. But I think what I most appreciated about Neville was how he was able to interpret the Bible in his own way and take the teachings of Abdullah and try and, as you said, translate it into a way that we could better understand, or at least his audience for the time, right?
Right.
Like I said, exactly. The first time, it just, yes. When I was in my staunch Christianity, yes. It made no sense to me at all. I thought he was crazy. He's blasphemous. You're going to hell.
Going to hell, yeah.
Is what I used to think, right? Not there anymore. But, you know, I certainly appreciate his teachings. I personally mostly listen to Neville or follow him for his creative visualization teachings.
Oh, yeah.
His teachings on how to visualize and how to really use your mind in order to get the things that you want. Because he was able to do some incredible things, especially getting out of the army. And that resonated with me because I'm prior military. And I was like, sure. Is that all I had to do? You mean 12 years wasted? No, I'm just
No, I'm sure it wasn't. But yeah, I get what you're saying. And his stories are really remarkable because they're kind of like the list of characteristics story that you told and that so many other women tell when it comes to bringing a man into their lives. The stories that he told, the manifestation stories, it was always they got exactly what they were looking for. They didn't get a close facsimile. They got precisely what they were looking for in every one of those stories.
Talking about today, making a list.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
that your wife made the list.
She did.
Tell us about that.
Well, Louise was formerly a psychotherapist, and she was a therapist when I met her, although she quit about 2 years into our relationship. But as part of her training to become a therapist, her professor had required the class to make a list so that they could experience how to do that, because the teacher knew, well, when you start having clients, you're going to want to do it with your clients as well. You know, it's one of the tools of the trade that you're going to put into your tool bag. And so she made a list and then she filed it away. And then years later, she met me and was telling me about the list. And she's like stopped in midair and said, I think you matched everything on the list. And then she said, Hannah, I think I know where it is. And she went and dug it out, pulled the list out. And sure enough, I matched every single thing on her list.
Wow. And look at that. You guys are still together years later.
That's right. Yeah. Going to celebrate our 22nd in September. So yeah.
Woohoo!
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
But the thing that's really fascinating is that she had created that list years before. It wasn't last year. It wasn't 2 years ago. And it wasn't something that she had kind of kept hanging around in her conscious mind. She had forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she had to think about where it might be because it wasn't something she had checked lately.
And isn't that interesting? Because ours are completely different. So she manifested you years later, whereas I manifested him within a month.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say maybe 2 weeks after I wrote the list. I met him, and I met him the first week that I was on Match. And as soon as I met him, then, of course, I got off.
And that was a question we asked ourselves. Why did it take her so long? And she actually had a very quick answer. She was right on top of what the answer was. The answer was she was not in alignment with her own list.
Ooh, okay.
Or the way she would have expressed it is she still had work to do on herself. And that, in fact, if I had met her the way she was at that time, I would have, in her words, run yelling and screaming in the opposite direction because she was so codependent at that point.
Wow.
Yeah.
Talk about self-awareness.
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. Louise is very self-aware. No doubt about that. But, and we agreed that, you know, if we had met, not only would I have run, she probably would have run too, because I was such the wallflower and had such low self-confidence. She wouldn't have been interested in me at all.
Oh.
Because that was what the experience was of all the women. I mean, I did not feel great about myself. And so, you know, self-confidence, if you don't have the self-love, somebody else isn't going to love you. Not the way you want to be loved anyway. It's just, you just can't. There's no way to make that happen. You know,
you cannot give what you do not have.
So it was probably just as well we didn't meet back then.
So actually it turned out to be she manifested you in perfect timing.
She did. Exactly. Yeah. And that's, to me, that's the real meaning of perfect timing, because the perfect timing is really what's perfect for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, thinking about me manifesting him now that we're having this conversation, Walt, it was perfect timing, because had I not met him, I never would have gotten deeper into the law of attraction. Because remember, I told you right before I met him, I had just watched The Secret for the very first time. And I was curious, you know, I was telling God, hey, what's this thing I'm here? You know, what is this kind of thing? Right. And then 2-3 weeks later, after meeting, you know, writing my list, I met him.
And got your answer.
Yeah. And because I met him, he started telling me about it. I used it, right, to manifest my very first luxury apartment.
Nice.
I was like, oh, this is real. Okay. Right? This is real. And whoever, I never would have guessed back in 2016, my meeting him would set me on the path to become a manifestation and mindset coach. Never in a million years, right? But that was perfect timing for us. Even though we did not stay together, I can totally see in hindsight how it was meant to be for me to attract him.
Yeah,
and for me to realize that you can get exactly what it is that you want. Because I guess if you think about it, Walt, that was my very first manifestation without knowing.
The first conscious one, yeah.
Yeah, my first conscious one. Without really knowing what the heck I was doing, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to start somewhere, that's for sure. Even though we've been doing it all of our lives, we just didn't know it.
All of our lives, yeah.
Since you had a very strong religious background, and you actually, to a certain degree, you continue to carry it through with your current understanding and with your current spiritual beliefs, although it has clearly modified compared to where it was before.
Right.
But coming from that background, I'm curious to know, how long did it take you to draw a line of equality between law of attraction and sowing and reaping? Because sowing and reaping is pretty much of a Christian concept, and it's pretty much law of attraction. So I was wondering, did you notice that early on? Did it take a while? How did that work?
No, I'm going to say it came gradually. I don't think I really put two and two together in the beginning. Yeah. Right. But like you said, you know, coming from a Christian background, that's always been my train of thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sowing and reaping, or you reap what you sow, rather, or you do not reap if you do not sow, right?
Right, right.
So I think the concept, you know, putting it together probably for me came more gradually. Definitely believe that now for sure, right? That's like energetic alignment. Or energy, vibration, what you put out, you get back, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's how I see it in terms of sowing and reaping. What I sow out to the universe is what I reap back.
Exactly.
And I'm okay with that. I think, I mean, now that we talk about it, I think it's just said in a different way. Christianity, we call it sowing and reaping on a more spiritual level, right? If you want to take the parameters away in terms of religious titles, then it's just spirituality and how the universe works. It's universal law. Mm-hmm. Just another way to say it, I guess. What do you think?
Well, what you're saying makes sense to me, because I have often, when if I've been in a conversation with somebody who I know is deeply religious, and particularly if they're asking me about law of attraction, the first thing I go to is sowing and reaping, figuring that's going to be the quick way to help them get there. And I'm just astounded. Every single time I get this blank look while their minds are racing through, trying to work through the parallels.
They never considered
it before.
Hmm.
So what you said matches. It matches the pattern that I've seen. That's why I'm so curious about it. I have a feeling part of it. You know, you tell me what you think about this, because I left the church when I was 14. Okay, so I did have some indoctrination, but I left it pretty early. For me, the thing that is different between the Christian concept, sowing and reaping, and law of attraction is that law of attraction goes a lot deeper and a lot broader. It's much more detailed than the way Christianity uses sowing and reaping. In fact, your typical pastor or preacher or minister or whatever will use it more as a morality tale than anything else, as a way of warning you, you know, be careful what you wish for, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, very rarely, if ever, can I recall anyone, any member of the cloth, so to speak, deliberately teaching sowing and reaping as a way to improve your life. That part seemed to be left out of most of the teachings.
Yeah, I'm curious. I even had to, you know, I had to check my mental Rolodex as well. And I was like, no, I don't remember my pastor ever putting it that way either. It was always tied to money most of the time.
Okay. So,
especially around giving tithes, but that's another subject, right? But it was mostly usually around, like you said, morality or money.
Okay. So my perception is true as far as you can see.
Oh, yeah. I would totally agree with your perception. Totally. I don't ever remember them talking about it in terms of how to make your life better or using it to make your life better, or that's actually how life works.
Yeah. Which just strikes me as really odd. Because it's not like the Bible verses, and it's been a long time since I've looked them up, but there are a number of Bible verses that refer to the sowing reaping concept. Mm-hmm. And it's not like the Bible verses say it only applies in certain areas of life or something like that.
Right. But isn't it interesting how it has only been applied to
certain
areas?
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair to say that religion is often used to control people.
Oh, totally.
You know, I mean, that's a big motivator.
Yeah, we know what
which is kind of sad and funny at the same time, because what that really means is that the people who are the pillars of the church are the most fearful. They fear that if they don't try to control you, their lives are going to be ruined. Like, wow, that's sick.
But you got to keep the machine going. Right?
I guess.
You got to keep feeding the monster.
Well, what I can tell you is I kind of wish I had made a list of what I wanted in a spiritual belief system. I kind of wish I had written it down. I might have gotten to this one sooner, because I spent a lot of years having to let go of that one with nothing else to hang on to. And I did. I just kind of gave up on spirituality for a long time because of that. So once again, the whole concept of making a written list is actually a pretty darn good idea.
It is. It totally is. That's something that I do with my clients when it comes to manifesting. What it is that you want, a lot of people just have kind of like a vague idea of what they want. Oh, I want a car. Oh, I want a home. Okay, what kind of house do you want? What city do you want to live in? What neighborhood, what school district do you want for your children, right? How many bedrooms, all that kind of stuff. I have them to get specific, but they never think about really writing it down. It's just kind of like swirling around in their head, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I don't know why it's not manifesting, or I don't know why it's not coming to fruition, but do you really know what you want? But like you said, that's with anything, everything.
And looking at my own experience, I am pretty sure that one of the main reasons, one of the main factors for not making a list is the fear that it's not going to come true anyway.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Because that way, if you're not committing to it, you know, well.
Then you're not then disappointed.
Disappointed, right.
Yeah. Which makes perfect sense. But I do have those clients, right? But I say, well, what if it does come true?
Yeah, right.
What about that, right?
Yeah.
Well, it could. No, it will, right? Mm.
Yeah. Different, it's good stuff.
Different line of thinking.
So you encourage people to make lists about anything that they're specifically trying to manifest.
Everything.
Doesn't matter what.
Everything. Oh, yes. And this is my personal belief, Walt. My belief is God, the universe, source, energy, whatever, right? He can work so much better if he knows exactly what I want. that just makes sense, right? If I told
my mom,
I want a new pair of shoes, and then she comes home with something totally ugly that I don't like, Can I be mad? No, all I asked for was a new pair of shoes. So she brought me a new pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if I say, hey, mom, I really want these black Nikes with the glitter on the side, and she comes home with the black Nikes with the glitter on the side, then I'm happy because I got mm-hmm. what I wanted because mm-hmm. she knew what I wanted.
That's right. Yeah. Well, also, you got happy about it. If you didn't get happy until after the shoe showed up, it probably wouldn't have worked out quite as nicely.
Right. Because I'm anticipating these Nikes and she comes home with these clogs. I don't know, mm-hmm. Crocs or something. I'm like, mm. Nothing against Crocs, but I'm not a Croc kind of girl.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Personally, I don't have any knowledge of Crocs, so you can't offend me, but oh, hopefully okay. No listeners are offended.
Sorry for all you Croc wearers out there. Sorry. I don't know. But I heard they're super comfortable, so not very cute, but comfortable.
The good thing is there are different strokes for different folks. Everybody has different interests. Everybody has different perceptions. And that makes the world go around.
That's what makes the world go around.
Yeah, it really does. So making lists, let's go back to that a little bit more, because what we're kind of hitting on here is not just for mates, it's for attracting anything, mm-hmm. and it's for getting specific. Mm-hmm. And that specificity is an interesting, it's an interesting standard and an interesting challenge all in one. The reason I say that is it is possible for us as human beings to become so specific that we talk ourselves out of believing in it. Whereas if we keep it general, a lot of teachers say, just keep it general.
Yeah.
The reason they're saying keep it general is so you don't get weighed down on, oh God, how am I going to get, you know, this particular pair of shoes with the gold trim and the blue shoelaces and so forth, because you don't believe deep down that such a shoe even exists.
Right.
So you keep it more general so that you can believe it more easily. But I get the feeling you kind of come down on the, well, I, more than a feeling, you've said it, you know, point blank, you come down on the specificity side.
Yes. You know, I'm a different kind of bird when it comes to manifesting. Just because I believe that God can do all things. So I kind of like to challenge God in a way. Because my personal belief is that he enjoys that. My personal belief is he wants to give me any and everything I can imagine, no matter how crazy or outlandish it may seem to someone or even myself. I like to think that God wants the opportunity to show me that he can do it, that he wants to do it. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm all about specificity. I'm never general when it comes to manifesting anything, not anything, just because that's kind of how I view manifesting. See, Walt, this is the thing. In my mind, if God is all, if he's created all, if he's in every single thing, I mean, you think about how complex is a black hole, if black holes are really real, and I think that they are, right? How complex is that? How complex is the universe and millions of galaxies that we may not even know exist? That's super complex. So you mean to tell me wanting to manifest the husband who is handsome, who is fit, who is rich, and somebody out there is going to say, oh my gosh, Monique, you are so, what's the word? So shallow.
Just not shallow.
Just a little bit, okay?
Just a little bit, okay.
I can own up to that. I live in the gym. I need my husband to live in the gym with me, okay?
Okay, all right.
I just believe that if God can make something as beautiful and as complex as a star, a supernova, the universe, you're trying to tell me I can't get a man who's handsome and all these other things that I want? Mm. Come on. Mm-hmm. This is God we're talking about. Of course mm-hmm. I can. So why not be specific in my, why not challenge God and say, hey, God, I know you can do it. Come on, show me what you got. I know you can do it. You've done it before, right? So that's how I tend to approach manifesting. And that is how I pretty much tend to teach my clients to manifest. You know what I say, Walt? Mm-hmm. You already know what I'm going to say. Why go for the Maserati? I mean, the Mazda when you really want the Maserati. I don't mm-hmm. believe in Mazdas. Now, no shade to Mazda. I'm just not a Mazda
girl. We just lost the Mazda advertising contract.
I'm sorry. Mazda's great. But, you know, I'm just not, I believe that we as human beings should have the best, should experience the best. If the best exists, we should have that, if that's what you want. And that's my personal standard, right? So that's the people who work with me are in alignment with how I think. And that's, I just like people to have what they want. And I think the best way to get that is to be super specific about it and don't be ashamed, because I believe that God wants to give it to you. Okay,
That was good. I'm going to take that. I'm going to challenge you a little bit further here and see what you have to say. I'm going to be very curious about this. Okay. Because we've talked in the past about God is really in us. We are really God.
Right.
So if I were to take what you said and kind of interpret it that way, what I'm really hearing you say is, I want to challenge myself.
Yes.
I want to challenge my own consciousness to create well beyond what, you know, might be a more mundane creation, because my consciousness was involved in creating all of creation.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly how I feel. And I'm glad that you framed it that way. That's excellent. But that ties back to one of the things that we love to talk about, right? Self-love, right? If you really love yourself, why wouldn't you create this reality for yourself? Why wouldn't you tell yourself that you can have these things and that you can make these things come true? Because if you think about it, Walt, isn't that what an Elon Musk has done?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what a Jeff Bezos has done? Isn't that what Steve Jobs did with these amazing companies and products and services that they have given the world, right? They had to believe the God within them, no matter what they called it, if they called it anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had to believe that the creator within them, who is them, right, could do these things and manifest these things, bring these things to fruition. And they did. Why? Because they loved themselves enough to believe, hey, I can do this. This is going to work, right? I may not have all the pieces now, but I know if I keep working towards it, it's going to happen, right?
Beautifully stated. I like that. And there's a couple of corollaries that I can kind of bring in here too. If it hasn't shown up yet, you haven't built up your self-love high enough yet.
Yes.
And yes. I always like this. This is something that listeners know about me. I'm not sure if you're aware of it yet, because I've been on the show like, you know, a month and a half, something like that. But I like, whenever I hear someone express something in negatives, I like to flip it around and turn it into the positives, just to change the wording of it. So taking what you said, I would like to turn it to, it takes self-love in order to create.
Absolutely.
It just takes self-love to create. If you don't have enough self-love, you can't create.
And most
self-love is, it's an essential ingredient. I mean, you really can't do without it.
No, you can't. Because if God is love, right? That's what they say. That's what we say. God is love. We are God. It's self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it would be to me.
It is. And it's essential.
Yeah.
Now, there's a second piece. Now, the talk that I have been preparing that I'm going to hopefully start giving as soon as I get my first official speaking engagement, hopefully it's going to be soon, is a two-pronged talk. It's building self-love, and it's also building social connectedness, both in breadth and in depth. And the reason I think those two things go together is, first of all, because there are a couple of reasons. First of all, because of what positive psychology has taught us. I mean, the positive psychology movement started in the mid 90s, and it has really evolved since then. And they were the ones who, through their various studies, identified that the most potent predictor of success for any human being is social connectedness, 70% predictive, which is pretty high. Yeah, 70%. I always like to draw the comparison. Cigarette smoking is 44% predictive of cancer. So that shows you how high this thing really is. It's pretty darn high.
Yeah.
And the thing that I have not seen, and I've actually asked people I know who are, you know, like my sister-in-law, she has a PhD in statistics and she's investigated a lot of this kind of stuff.
Ooh.
I said, have you seen anything from the positive psychology folks about what happens from building self-love up? And she can kind of point to stuff indirectly, but they haven't really looked at that yet. So I'm kind of waiting for them to look at that part. But I'm convinced that they're going to find that the two go together. And the other reason why I think that's important is when I look at what I understand as source energy, you know, the energy that creates everything.
Right.
When I look at that concept, and we are part of that, right? So we're part of the whole. We're individuals, but we're also part of the whole at the same time.
Right.
If I were to translate that into human terms, I would say that the part of us that are individuals, that's where the self-love piece is concerned. And the part where we're part of the whole, that's the social connectedness part. So literally, in my metaphor, no, I guess a metaphor isn't literally, is it? So I got to change that. But in my metaphor, the social connectedness is all about taking advantage of the fact that we are energetically connected to each other.
Oh,
and
definitely.
Using that energy, leveraging that energy, both for ourselves and for the people that we connect to. So it's a mutual leverage that comes from social connectedness. That connectedness becomes almost, well, I think it was the, what was the book? The Celestine Prophecy fiction book about, it was basically James Redfield's view of how spirituality works. And one of the things he taught in there was the idea of one person sending energy to another person. And that if you have two people sending energy to each other, it amplifies.
Mm.
It actually expands beyond the sum of the parts. And that's very source energy oriented as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Right?
It completely is.
So that's why it makes total sense to me that the combination of building self-love and building social connectedness is the guaranteed way to produce any kind of success in your life, no matter what it is.
I agree with that. And I love how you termed it, Walt. You said leveraging, right?
Yeah.
Leveraging each other's energy. I love that concept. I'm going to borrow it. I'm not going to steal it. I'm going to borrow it.
Okay? No, you can steal it if you want. There was a great line from the West Wing series. One of the characters in that series, played by Rob Lowe, made the comment one time that good writers borrow from other writers, great writers steal outright. So steal away.
Okay. I have your permission, right?
That's right. But I think it's a really important concept.
It's so important. It's so important. Yeah, it's so important, which ties back to self-image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Had an interesting, I've been, by the way, trying these ideas out on social media in the LOA groups, because that's like my laboratory, you know, just to see how stuff works and how it plays. Ran into one person who, she was posting something about, oh geez, what was it? I think it was about friends who live in a different place from where she lives on campus. And so she feels like she's outside their circle, and they've kind of invited her to come visit anytime, but she hasn't really done that. And she feels like she's excluded. And I mean, there was this whole thing there. And so I proposed the idea of building self-love up. And in the exchange that she and I had, I began to become aware that, like many people, she didn't actually associate self-love with any kind of attractive ability. And I don't mean necessarily law of attraction, although certainly that's part of it. I mean like personal attraction, like attracting friends, attracting a mate. She didn't make that association at all.
Really?
So I had to kind of walk her through it. It surprised me at first. And then I thought back on my own experience and where I was at. And you know what? I probably would have had the same level of skepticism she has.
Right.
So it's something that I'm realizing I'm going to need, especially when I'm doing my talks, I'm going to need to really draw a hard, direct line between the two. That self-love is directly connected to bringing people into your life. That if you don't have enough self-love, you're not going to bring the people into your life. But if you do build your self-love, they're going to start showing up in ways they didn't show up before.
Same thing with your self-image as well. Yeah. Because exactly. What I'm starting to do now, Walt, is I'm starting to shift my focus in my business to business owners, because what I am realizing is a lot of business coaches that I'm finding, they're kind of stuck at the 10K a month mark, right? Mm. But they are not understanding why they can't make the leap. Like, they can't make over that, and they're like on this financial roller coaster kind of thing, right? 1 month is 2,000, maybe they make 10, back down to 5, back up to 7, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So just in talking with them and getting them to understand, especially with a former client, that a lot of it is your self-image, which ties back to what we are talking about is self-love.
Yeah.
Right. Yourself. I mean, Dr. Maxwell Maltz talked about that in Psycho-Cybernetics. I totally believe that self-love and self-image are like this. They're interconnected. It's the attractiveness that you're talking about and not necessarily the law of attraction, but people's attraction to you, right? Mm-hmm. People can tell right away from a conversation, just maybe from the way you dress. Funny story.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit cray cray. Okay. I'm a little crazy because
hey, you know, I think it's healthy to be crazy, but you go right ahead.
So one of the things, my daughter always laughs at me because when I see cars that do not have, when I see cars that do not have hubcaps on them, right, drives me nuts.
Okay.
And my daughter says, I don't understand, Mom. What does them, you know, having hubcaps have to do anything with you? I said, if you notice the car that they're driving that doesn't have hubcaps, that's a reflection on how they view themselves.
Ah.
How they're taking care of that car is probably how they take care of themselves or feel about themselves. That's their self-image. Because, you know, a lot of people buy cars tied to their self-image.
This is true.
You know, buy the Maseratis and, you know, the fancy cars. You know, they're not just buying Mercedes just because, right?
Right, yeah.
It carries a certain self-image. Certain image, right? So, yeah, that's just a little funny story kind of
thing. It's a valid point, though. It's a really valid point. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're right. The car that you drive is a direct reflection of how you feel about yourself.
And how you keep it. If you keep it up. If you wash it, if you clean it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And usually, they usually translate into other areas of your life. And I'll just put it like that. Right.
Well, I think you're going to have to, because we only have about 2 or 3 minutes left. So we wouldn't be able to get into the full topic the way we would normally want to do that.
Right.
But we can save that for another time.
But you know,
yeah,
I mean, it's something to think about that, like you, my daughter, she didn't put two and two together. And I was like, that's tied to self-image, which ties to self-love. Right.
It certainly does.
Standards, because I feel like I love myself. I have a certain level that this is where I am, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's really, really true. And mm-hmm. In fact, that is actually one of the things that the positive psychology folks have identified. I'm not sure if they've done extensive studying on it, but let's put it this way. There is a general consensus within the positive psychology community that there is a direct connection between self-esteem, self-confidence, and self-love, that they all are basically different ways of saying the same thing.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I agree.
Now what I'm looking for is the day when they start doing the studies that show when you increase your self-love, you actually increase your success levels. I haven't seen that one yet, but I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to come out any day now. That's like
any day now.
Any day now. I do want to remind people, make sure you use the LOA Today app, sending questions and comments, because we love when that happens. We had some really great ones yesterday.
And,
you know, we like having them here on the Wednesday show too. So, you know, if you have something you want to share, please share it. That's why we included the forms in the app, so you can do that. Also, take advantage of, if you haven't been reading any of the manifestation stories in the ebook that I just added, there's now 3 ebooks in there, but the third one, the one I just added, has some really great manifestation stories, including the last one. I made reference to it on yesterday's show, but I'll make reference to it again. It's the longest story of the collection. And if you want to read about a roller coaster of two people who are still struggling to understand how to apply this law of attraction concept, read that story. It'll blow your mind. You'll just be like, oh my God. So with that thought in mind, thank you very much, Monique. I'm looking forward to doing this again with you next week.
Yes, me too.
It's going to be good stuff. Thank you very much to our live stream was actually pretty quiet. We had people watching, but they were very, very quiet. So thank you to you. And thank you also to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.